legislation. The next step in the land movement was to set up the unincorporated land councils. The first one of these was in North Queensland. It's called the North Queensland Land Council. I was an executive on that organisation for 5 years. The second was in the northwest Kimberleys region. It's called the Kimberley Land Council. And then we moved into other parts of Australia and set up New South Wales, the Southeastern Land Council in Victoria, the Tasmanian Aboriginal Centre in Tasmania, the Pitjantjatjara Land Council in South Australia, the Southern Land Council in South Australia, and the last one, we're happy to say, being set up has been the Pilbara Land Council. In 1979 at Nookanbar, in the northwest of Australia in the Kimberleys, when the traditional owners tried to stop a drilling company from coming in and drilling for oil on one of their sacred sites, a concept of a national federation was first thought of, or first talked about, and it was finally set up in 1981. In 1980, the Pitjantjatjara Land Rights Bill went through South Australian Parliament, and it was quite different to the Northern Territory Bill, mainly because the traditional owners there were still very much on their own land.
Deep breaths after the engaged and engaging speak of Shorty O'Neill. He touched upon the question of bringing up the European people, European colonialists. And that is why I sigh, because all the time the Sami people has been living in contact with internal European colonialism. It has, in a sense, always been exactly this perspective we have had to have on the question, to try to convene or show to the European nations how important it is for us to be able to go on living as a people, as an indigenous group in Europe. Since 1975, when the Sami organizations got involved in the cooperation within the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, we have been seeing how similar the questions relating to land rights questions, to cultural rights, are around the world, how similar our problems are to the problems of indigenous peoples in the colonial areas. We, by joining the work in the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, we got, so to say, an extended and a strengthened perspective on our own situation in Europe. This similarity, which we feel, we're trying to work on in theory and practice within our own organizational work. But we'd also try to, in a sense, mediate in this work that there is probably one sort of difference in our situation. And that's exactly the fact that we are living in Europe. And the fact that we have been exposed to European colonialism in an internal sense for fishing at large in the traditional area. And that is a consequence of the way the legal process has happened from a despotical king's way of writing bills towards a democratic government's way of writing bills. It's the same thing that happened.
Do the Sami have a preferential right to fish and game in any of the Scandinavian countries?
Yes, I think I can state that in the Swedish Reindeer Breeding Act, or acts in function now, there is a certain preference for reindeer breeders or reindeer breeding Samis to execute and control hunting and fishing within their reindeer breeding districts. I wouldn't be able to say now to what extent this is an exclusive right, but that it is there is for certain, that it can be checked in reference literature.
In the political program adopted by the Sami, you say that they are asking for their own institutions of self-government. I think I understood it that way. Are they asking for any preference regarding taking fish and game? Is that a matter that is of importance to them?
I would say that the possibility to fish and hunt is of big importance to many Sami communities. But there has been a process of resource extermination of the wildlife and the life in the river due to external exploitation. So that in some areas, the traditional habits of fishing and hunting have been deteriorating. We see, however, that there is a very great potential for restoring and even modernizing the potential which lies in hunting, fishing, and trapping as a part of the natural economy, and we could even say as a part of the modern economy of the Sami area. So I would say it is a general, for instance, say that my home community has made a very comprehensive general plan. It's a general plan that it is obliged to make. This community, where I come from, is the largest Sami community, both in area and in population. And the general plan expressly states that the aim of the Gvoldagain community is to preserve the community as a secure base for the Sami population, and preserve the land as a secure base for the traditional Sami economical system, and that any industrial development should be adjusted to those aims. Some of the other communities also have statements in such direction. It is a sort of distance between this local political process and the organizational Sami process. They are not identical. And as I said, there is going to be a considerable amount of debate on how the accustomed local government in the Sami areas is to be adjusted to the election, for instance, of a Sami parliament. It's clear what is the aim of the Sami organizations. It's also clear that local communities within themselves have a development of their local character as Sami communities. And those two developments of the organizational aspect in the wider sense, leading hopefully to the election of a Sami parliament, and the process that's taking place within the local communities, somehow can be merged in the future. They are not merged yet, but the direction of development point that they are coming closer to each other. And well,
no confidence votes last Friday, but before this, Adesut voted together with Siumut and passed the agreement with EEC that Greenland could leave EEC from 1985 and get a new state, overseas land and territories state towards EEC, and it means that Greenland could export fish and other products to EEC without duties. In many ways, this agreement seems to be rather favorable for Greenlandic, also because Greenland could regulate the part of EEC in Greenlandic fishing if the biologists should regard it as dangerous for fish stocks in Greenland. Today, the biologists mean that it is agreeable order. In connection with parties, I think that I ought to mention that Greenlandic parties developed within the last 10 years were established quite independent from Danish party system. And in this way, Greenlandic party politics is outside the Danish party politics, except that Siumut became member of International Socialist Association, and the Danish Social Democrats and German Social Democrats, and maybe also Specialist Social Democrats, are member of this association. Beyond this, there is no formal connection between Greenlandic and Danish parties. And it means also that Greenland is very little affected of change of cabinet in Denmark. There has been a social democratic cabinet for many years in Denmark, and it was replaced by a conservative coalition almost 2 years ago, and it had not changed the relationship to the Greenlandic political life. But in connection with the Home Rule, the parliamentarism was not introduced in connection with the Home Rule Act in Greenland. This is prepared, and I think that it was passed now, so that it should be possible to have election within the four years election term. I think I lack one thing, that there were found mineral resources in Greenland, and among them cryolite was exploited by Danish company from about 1860. Now it is emptied, and it was extractive economy seen from Greenland. Today there is lead and zinc mine in Umanak municipality. Thoughts by Chairman Mao, but statistical information about Greenland. There are no description, distinction between Greenland Inuit and the Danes. There are only persons born in Greenland and persons born outside Greenland. And according to this, there are a little more than 40,000 persons born in Greenland and a little under 10,000 persons born outside Greenland. It corresponds roughly to Danes and Greenlanders, but we don't know the exact number. And in other aspects, there are, in fact, very little distinction between them. But there are differences in culture, in education, and maybe also occupation that sometimes make it very hard to Greenland Inuit to acquire the same status as the Danes in Greenland.
No preferences for the Aboriginal population. Did you have another question?
Yes, just a follow-up to that. I honestly didn't know what the answer to that was going to be, and the next question is in the context of the experience that we're having in the Northwest Territories right now with the development of self-government. One of the problems right now is that Native people, I don't know, I'll leave the Eastern Territory to those people over there, but on the Western half there's a certain school of thought that says the Native people are in the majority there, and therefore, you know, we can be in a control position. But I think our answer to that is that we expect somewhere down the road that there is going to be more and more immigration from southern Canada, and we will eventually become a minority there, and therefore we need some special provisions for our people. And I'm wondering, is that a concern for you in Greenland?
Was not what we wanted. We noticed that the beneficiaries of your claim settlement was only limited to the number of people that happened to be around at that time. So people that were born after were not going to be able to benefit directly in this. So this presented us a problem, and we had to, when we came to trying to design a corporation, we wanted to get around this problem. So what we did was we set up a membership corporation where if you are an Inuk and you're enrolled and you become a beneficiary of the agreement, then your descendants automatically become beneficiaries or shareholders of this corporation as well. Here in Alaska, I understand that you can sell your shares after a certain period of time. Now, we thought that that was contrary to what the compensation was supposed to do. The compensation was supposed to go to the native people for the damages that they had suffered. It wasn't something that you should be able to sell off and end up with your native corporation basically being owned by outsiders again, which was very easy and financially tempting if you could do that. So we made it impossible to sell your shares. And you can't will your share to anybody. Your descendants will automatically become members of the corporation and do not, they can enjoy the benefits of the corporation but could not vote until they reach the age of 18. We also put in some other rules in the corporation so that a limited few would not take all the benefits and run. We made it so that if there is to be any benefit given, it could not be given to an individual. It could not be given to an individual as distinct from the community. So if you were going to give something to your people, you had to make the offer to all of your people. These are some of the basic principles that we began to adopt. There was another thing that we had been told was that in the corporation structures here, the financial controls or the financial requirements were pretty free, very free money. It was very easy to spend that money.